Welcome to Conversations on Healthcare with Mark Maselli and Margaret Flinter. Mark is the founder, president, and CEO of Community Health Center Incorporated, a provider of primary health care services for the uninsured and underserved in 13 cities and 128 service locations in Connecticut. Margaret is senior vice president and clinical director of CHC and is a family nurse practitioner by profession. Conversations on Healthcare is a weekly look at the people and ideas that are transforming the delivery of healthcare in America. And this week, Mark and Margaret are joined by Vermont Governor Peter Shumlin. In the Tech Report segment, you'll hear about Medic Mobile, which uses SMS messages to connect community healthcare workers in developing countries with clinics and resources. And we begin with this week's bright idea. Here's Margaret Flinter.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. This week's bright idea focuses on a model of care that breaks away from the traditional nursing home. The Greenhouse Project. It began several years ago when Dr. William Thomas, well-known gerontologist, set out to radically change the way we care for our elders.
In the greenhouse, we acknowledge the meaning and the depth of elderhood, and we embrace it.
In place of the often sterile environment of nursing homes, he designed a new kind of space, a living space for elders that more closely resembles home. Greenhouses offer residents intimate living space, typically for 7 to 10 elders, and have been shown to improve their health and their well-being. The interior and exterior of the spaces are not only aesthetically pleasing, but the whole design encourages social interaction. And owning up to its name, the green homes use cost-effective, smart technology. This small, home-like environment also makes room for skilled nursing care. A strong, self-managed work team structure is in place to care for residents on a daily basis. In addition to a more pleasing environment and more engaged staff, the program has been identified as a more financially feasible alternative to traditional nursing homes, too, while providing significant improvement in clinical outcomes. Offering dignity, comfort, and independence to our elders? Now that's a bright idea.
Today, Mark and I are joined by Governor Peter Shumlin, who was sworn in as governor of Vermont last year. Governor Shumlin, welcome.
It's great to be with you.
You know, you signed House Bill 202 on May 26th of this year, making Vermont the first U.S. state to successfully enact a single-payer legislation, which is called Green Mountain Care. Now, advocates in dozens of states have tried to do so and failed over the past 20 years. They say the single-payer model is the way to manage the growing number of uninsured and contain double-digit increases in health care costs. Governor, how'd you get it passed?
Well, a lot of hard work and dedication and bright people in Vermont. You know, I think one of the reasons we got it passed is that the special interests have less influence in Vermont than they do in other parts of the country. We have a citizen legislature. Our legislators work about 16 weeks a year. They get paid about $600 a week for those 16 weeks. No benefits, no health insurance. And frankly, they're just here because they care deeply about their state. So we have less special interests, less pharmaceutical companies, other special interests trying to cut off the seeds of progress.
So, Governor, we have been following Vermont's very innovative work in healthcare delivery redesign for years now. You've been an early adopter of the patient-centered medical home and innovations like the community-based care management teams for folks with chronic disease. And your pilots have certainly shown great promise, and those have been reported out in some of the national journals. And it strikes us those redesigns were done under the current system. So what was the compelling basis for the move to single payer in Vermont? Did you come to the conclusion that you couldn't ultimately really improve access and delivery and control costs unless you also transform the payment and financing system?
That's correct. And let me just sort of tell you what the goals are here and what the challenge is. The challenge is that, like much of the rest of America, Vermont's healthcare spending has doubled in the last decade. To put that in dollar amounts, we've watched our spending for 625,000 citizens go from $2.5 billion to $5 billion. Now, we're just a small state. Worse, or more compelling, by 2015, absent any change, we're going to be asking Vermonters to shell out an additional $2,500 a year for every single living Vermonter for just the increase in health insurance costs out of pockets where, on average, Vermonters are making the same money they were making 10 years ago. So you have to ask the obvious question, where's that money supposed to come from? Mm-hmm. So the short answer is, healthcare costs in America, we're spending more per capita on healthcare than any other nation in the world. Our outcomes are less successful. That means we're less healthy when you look at the dollars we spend. And we're going to bankrupt job growth, small business, and middle-class Americans trying to keep up. So we're trying to do three things. Pass a healthcare system where healthcare is a right and not a privilege. That's important. Mm-hmm. Second, where healthcare follows the individual and isn't a requirement of the employer. I think that's a huge jobs creator. And finally, where we use our healthcare dollars to make people healthy. In other words, spend less of them for better outcomes by getting rid of insurance company profits, pharmaceutical profits, the extraordinary waste and inefficiency in the system, and moving to a system where we reimburse providers based upon keeping Vermonters healthy, not the crazy fee-for-service system we have now where the more procedures they do for you, the more they get paid. And that's the system we're trying to invent here in Vermont.
Governor, let's talk a little bit about the Affordable Care Act and how it relates to the single-payer model. Now, there are key provisions that states won't be able to opt out until 2017, including the individual mandate, the employer penalty for not providing coverage, and the structure of the health insurance exchanges. But all of those don't seem to really impact the single-payer system. The president has agreed to support granting states more flexibility with waivers. What type of waivers do you need to give you the flexibility to implement the single-payer model by 2014?
Well, first, let me tell you how grateful I am to President Obama for recognizing what Vermont and other states are doing. And this is what he told myself and the other governors at my urging last January. He said, listen, I don't think we got health care perfectly at the federal level. He understands that the special interests spent $1.5 million a day to make sure that, you know, real single-payer health care didn't happen down there. So what he said is, each state should be the laboratory for change, as long as you're not reducing standards for vulnerable Americans. And he's right about that. So we need two sets of waivers. The first is we need Congress to change the provision that says states are not allowed to have single-payer systems until 2017 because we want ours up and running when the federal bill goes into effect in 2014. So that's one thing that we desperately need. Second, we're working very, very closely with the Secretary Sebelius to get other waivers so that we can take our Medicaid and Medicare dollars, our public dollars, and put them in a single pool and let us administer them in our system so that we treat all Vermonters the same. So the notion is, you are a resident of the state of Vermont, you get a Green Mountain health care card. That health care card gives you access to the full benefits of that all Vermonters should have to stay healthy, managing those dollars better than we currently do. And a lot of folks say to me, you know, Governor, this is so radical. How can you do this? And I say two things. I say, wait a minute. First of all, it's only radical in America. Every other developed country in the world has figured this one out. You know, I go up and see my friend Premier Charest in Quebec. And, you know, after a couple of glasses of wine, he says, Governor, you know, I love eating your lunch and New Hampshire's lunch and New York's lunch and Maine's lunch, the people that border Quebec, on jobs. And I said, well, what do you mean? I said, that's not very nice. He said, well, you know, here's the thing. These companies come up, they're looking where to locate. They look at Quebec, they look at Vermont, New York, New Hampshire, and Maine. And I just say to them, hey, go ahead, go down to America. But it's going to cost you between $8,000 and $12,000 an employee in health care that is covered by everybody in Canada. And he says, I get them every time. So this is an economic development issue. It's an economic sustainability issue. And I think it's a human right, health care. So those are the issues that we're working on so hard here.
So, Governor, those of us who follow health policy issues closely all read Health Affairs. And the July 2011 issue presents a economic forecast of the impact of the Vermont single-payer system that I think would turn the head of any governor or state legislature, predicts new job creation, cost control, savings, really a very positive scenario. Now, you meet with governors all across the country and talk to them. Do you see serious interest out there in other states across America, or are you seen as a sort of unique situation in Vermont, you know, more rural, smaller, maybe a little more homogeneous with only a few major insurers? What's the national response to what you're doing?
Well, you know, I got to be honest with you. I think they think that we're a little unusual up here. And, you know,
special.
I'll be honest with you, we are. This is the Green Mountain State. And all I can tell you is that I'm convinced that if we can get this one right, which I'm sure we can, that the other states are going to wish that they were we. And I say that because I'm a small business person. I'm an entrepreneur. And I can tell you that the cost that I can't handle are the costs I can't control in business. And when you, as a business person, a small business person, remember that the 80% of Vermont's businesses have less than 50 employees. We're a small business state. And when you see your costs go up 20-30%, where we're all sending more and more money to insurance companies and getting less and less coverage, where costs are spiraling at 2 to 3 times the cost of inflation, the cost of growth of incomes and inflation, you know, this is not sustainable. And you can go to the greatest critics of my plan in this state, hospital administrators, doctors, others who are very nervous about this, and say, but wait a minute, what if we do nothing? And they'll say to you, hey, that's not an option. Mm-hmm. The current system is not sustainable. And I say that change is going to come from small rural states for the simple reason that we're going to go down first. Mm-hmm. Our rural providers can't survive on 40 cents on a dollar for Medicaid and Medicare. They're closing their doors and moving out. And we have a great healthcare system here, but if we don't pay our providers enough, they can't survive in the state, and that's what's happening to rural medicine in America. So there's a lot of reasons why you derive this: cost, delivery of care, and basic human right.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. Today we're speaking with Vermont Governor Peter Shumlin. You know, we read an interesting analysis of the wide variation in Medicaid spending throughout the United States, and found that the Medicaid programs in New England spent more on prescription cost and outpatient visits, but had lower average number of hospital days. And we've seen in your own state some impressive stats on your overall health. The rate from cardiovascular disease is down in the past 5 years. Smoking rates have been down since 1990. Now, you also operate a very unique Medicaid program with a unique waiver. You're able to sort of determine the benefits that you'll offer and which populations will be covered. How do you connect the flexibility that you have to the outcomes that you've improved? And also, have you been able to control cost better than others have?
We have, but only slightly. And you know what I keep saying about healthcare is if you nibble around the edges, you're not going to get there. You got to be willing to go for the whole enchilada. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you why I say that. You have to ask the question, where's this money, Governor, going to come from? And here's the answer. With your Green Mountain Healthcare card, we're going to have a single payer, just like, by the way, General Motors, IBM, or Dell and Microsoft. They all have single ERISA self-insured plans. So we have our own little self-insured plan. You'll go up to the counter with your card when you're done visiting your provider. And when you get to the counter, we're going to have the technology so that the person behind the counter will turn to you and say, hey, we just did $1,000 worth of work on you. Under your Green Mountain Healthcare plan, you have to pay $100. We're paying $900 or whatever the dollar amounts are, check, cash, or credit card. And you will not leave that office before you adjudicate that bill any more than you'd leave the grocery store without paying up there. That saves, according to Dr. Shao from Harvard, who modeled this program for us and has designed single-payer plans all over the world, that saves about $500 million. So that's low-hanging fruit. Second, with that same Green Mountain card, we will have your medical records, a pipeline to your medical records and to everything that's happened to you in the past, so we don't duplicate tests, so that we know what the last provider did to you, and so that we can more holistically manage your care. That's what we're doing now. And third and finally, and most importantly, we want to go to a system where with that provider, they get paid for keeping you healthy, not for the number of procedures that you live by. So the bottom line is we are making progress with cost containment. We are slightly ahead of the other states, but we're not doing well enough. And until we reform the entire system, I don't believe we're going to make the progress we have to make to compete for jobs and economic opportunities.
Governor, your campaign for governor certainly included the twin themes of job creation and health care reform, and that was again emphasized in the recent Health Affairs article. Maybe you could help explain to our listeners and pull that thread. How does a single-payer system create jobs in a state like Vermont? Certainly, I assume some of this is pulling in new jobs maybe from out of state, but some of it is losing them. Just walk people through that for us.
Well, you know, you have to look at the big picture for a minute. I mean, let's just look at the extraordinary federal dollars we just spent to bail out General Motors and Chrysler as an example. Now, we did that because they were competing with companies all over the world where the automobile company wasn't responsible for their employees' health care. I say that if we're the first state that divorces the payment system from business, many businesses will wish that they were in Vermont and not in the other 49 states. So that's a huge jobs creator. Now, the second piece is, as business people and as middle-class Americans, to keep up with the rising cost of health care, we are sacrificing other expenditures that we would make on consumer goods, in the case of business, on investment and obviously innovation, raises for your employees, you know, all kinds of things. So as long as we are spending double, triple what the rest of the world is spending to produce the same goods, that's a jobs downer. It's costing us economic opportunities. So I think both getting it off of businesses' back and spending our dollars more wisely so that we can use dollars as both consumers and businesses to invest in smarter and better products, it's a huge jobs creator. And let me just put it this way. Listen, I ask you this. This is very ambitious what we're doing in Vermont. But what if we fail? What if we can't do it? Where are we then? And I say, we can't afford the system that we have. And if we're not willing to make bold change to move to a better system, we will, in fact, be so complacent that we will see our jobs opportunities continue to be eaten by people who are doing it better than we. No one else in the world is spending like we are. We can't sustain this. You know, we're bigger, more wasteful on energy and on health care than any other country in the world. If we think we can just keep doing that, we've got a big surprise coming. If you're not holistically reforming the system, when you nibble around the edges, if you grab the balloon in one place, it'll pop out somewhere else, and we need wholesale reform.
Governor, tell us maybe a little bit about what you're doing to address the issue of the next generation of healthcare providers in Vermont. You've certainly got some great health professions training institutes up there for nursing and medicine, dentistry, and all the health professions. But are you doing anything that you think is a best practice around retaining this group of healthcare providers or making sure we attract the next generation to stay in Vermont?
Well, we're convinced that if we pass this system, we'll have a attraction and retention tool that the other 49 states don't have for this simple reason. When you go out and talk to healthcare providers, they don't want insurance companies second-guessing them. They don't need insurance companies second-guessing them. They don't need endless paperwork and bureaucracy and a payment system that gives them 40 cents on a dollar for a dollar's work. What they actually want to do is do what they were trained to do, make people healthy, have enough time with their patients to ensure that they're getting healthy outcomes. And that's the system we're designing. So we have all kinds of young physicians that come to our meetings and say, gosh, please get this done. Because we're trying to figure out where to practice, and the options don't look so good under the current system in America. Insurance companies down your backs, a payment system that makes no sense, very tough to go into private practice anymore because of this crazy bureaucracy. All these folks want to do is make people healthy and get paid a decent wage for their hard work. And we think we're going to design a system that's going to do that.
Governor Shumlin, we'd like to ask all of our guests this final question. When you look around the country and the world, what do you see in terms of innovations, and who should our listeners at Conversations be keeping an eye on?
Well, you know, I think in terms of innovation in all sectors, not just healthcare, I'm very optimistic about our future. As I, you know, I've said this so many times, I sound like a broken record, but I'm convinced that as we move from an oil-based economy worldwide to one that is powered by other resources, we have an economic opportunity that's going to make the Industrial Revolution and the tech boom look small. When we're not just talking about wind and solar and biomass and all the ways that we're going to power the world, but we're talking about the way we build our homes and our schools and our churches, and we build the ones we have. We have an extraordinarily bright agricultural future in the Northeast because of the buy local, grow local, farm to plate, the fact that Americans suddenly care about not only what they eat, but who grew it and what's in it. We have a very bright future in manufacturing if we play our cards right. So I'm really optimistic about our future, about where we're going, but I do think that we need more boldness from government leaders who are willing to make the infrastructure investments in education and job retraining, in renewable energy, and moving off oil as fast as we can, in technology, telecommunications, so that we can compete, and also in healthcare, so that we're reducing the dollars we're spending on healthcare and give them to other more important areas when we know that we're wasting huge dollars there. And if we do those things and have the courage to do them in government, we all win.
Today we've been speaking with Governor Peter Shumlin, who was sworn in as governor of Vermont just last year. Governor Shumlin, thank you so much for joining us today on Conversations on Healthcare.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We close with the Tech Report, our weekly look at how people are using technology to improve health and wellness. I'm Lauren Bonner. When Josh Nesbitt, Chief Executive Officer of Medic Mobile, visited a clinic in rural Malawi as an undergrad at Stanford University in 2007, he saw a big gap in how community health workers were connecting with the clinic.
I was told that they had used about 500 community health workers who were volunteers to try to decentralize patient care, to essentially link clinics to communities. And I was at the hospital for about 8 weeks, and I only met one of those 500 community health workers. He was walking about 40 kilometers every week to hand-deliver these paper patient reports. These community health workers were just as disconnected as patients were from the clinic and from the resources.
Community health workers, or CHWs, in developing countries help fill a critical shortage of medical professionals. They're given basic training, supplies, and support to go out into the community and provide primary care services. In places like Malawi, where a majority of the population lives in rural areas, CHWs travel far and they're not always equipped with communication tools. Nesbitt saw a way to help through mobile messaging. The cellular signal in Malawi was strong, as it is throughout most of the developing world. He found a guy back at Stanford who helped him create free open-source text message software, and he rounded up about 100 used cell phones to take back to Malawi. When the first Medic Mobile pilot began in 2008, penetration rates in rural Malawi were still low. Roughly 2 in 10 CHWs owned a mobile phone. So Nesbitt and his team distributed handsets, which could also be used by workers for personal use or business. Medic Mobile's humble beginnings using freeform SMS messaging were encouraging. Nesbitt says clinics doubled the number of patients they were treating with tuberculosis, and they were doing things like responding to emergency care situations for the first time. Based on the success of this model, Medic Mobile has been building more open-source mobile tools to help bridge the gaps in healthcare in developing countries even more so. Most recently, the team saw a need to create more structured data collecting on regular cell phones. This has allowed clinics to do stock reporting and even create patient records. Now that almost 50% of people in sub-Saharan Africa own a cell phone, and almost the entire population is expected to do so in a year or two, Medic Mobile is building apps that use SMS or SIM applications that can run on any phone. The company is always looking for ways to advance the technology, but first, Nesbitt says, they just want to get as many CHWs connected.
But one thing that I try to be really clear about is that we aren't even close to meeting demand. There are millions, by some accounts, 8 million community health workers, and that cadre of health worker around the world. And anywhere between 20 and 30,000 are sort of properly equipped with mobile technology. And I think that number should be in the millions. And so our first goal is to figure out what works and then to scale that as quickly as possible, because we know that the impact is there and waiting.
That's Lauren Bonner with this week's edition of the Tech Report. If you have questions for Mark Maselli and Margaret Flinter, or would like to subscribe to the Conversations podcast, you can visit them on the web at chc1.com. The Health Forum is part of Connecting Our Communities from Connecticut Public Broadcasting in partnership with area nonprofits, and production support for Conversations on Healthcare has been provided in part by Community Health Center Incorporated. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum on the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network, and the Real Life Survival Guide is next.